Apartment people, my name is Dave, and I bring you good news. From Champion, River Park of Dublin, it's a brand new community now open and leasing. I've been to it. It's kitchen clean. And they've got a new enticement. You get 2 months free when you sign a 12-month or longer lease, and you move in by the beginning of October. Everything's new. New pool, new fitness center, free Starbucks coffee, EV charging stations, parking, garage. River Park of Dublin. Now make the move, literally. LiveWithChampion.com. Schedule a tour. LiveWithChampion.com.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
WMAL, where Washington comes to talk. Joining us now on the line, Jake Tapper, anchor of The Lead and State of the Union over at CNN, and a man whose name has popped up in some of these WikiLeaks emails. Good morning to you, Jake.
Good morning to you.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be sort of disconcerting. I imagine, you know, you get a big dump of WikiLeaks emails, all of a sudden you see your name popping up. Let me just go over one that I know that you probably have something to say about. One is we see you reaching out to John Podesta and congratulating him on his new position and also saying, would you like to come on my show? That seems completely polite and above board, and the kind of email I sent many, many times over the course of my career. But then there's another one in which he asks, in the title of the email, why is Jake Tapper such a, well,
D-word.
D-word, it's the shortened version of the name Richard. Let's put it
right
that way. Yeah.
Yeah, and there were a couple others there. I mean, it's fun. It's always interesting to see what people say about you behind your back, right?
Yeah, while you're trying to be nice and cordial to them. What lesson have you learned, Jake Tapper?
Well, I'm always going to be polite. I send thank you notes to guests on the show, and I congratulate. You know, it's so weird because, I mean, I have congratulated Donald Trump and Ted Cruz and whatever. I mean, on air during shows, if they win a primary or something, I say congratulations. It's kind of just basic politeness. But I did like the one where Podesta wondered why I was such a Richard, to coin your phrase.
Yeah.
And then there was another one where I was in a very heated fight with Think Progress because they had misreported on something. They blamed conservative talk radio for something I had reported when I was reporting critically on the Obama administration. And what was the other one? I was the only reporter to ask about a bill that Bill Clinton had signed into law honoring the Confederacy back when he was governor of Arkansas. And
They were
talking about that.
I wanted to ask you about that, Jake, because that one in particular, I didn't understand that because, you know, if we were going to be doing this, that was during the whole the news cycle where people, you know, the South Carolina
Confederate flag.
Yeah. And so if we were going to address that issue here on radio, we would ask either the candidate or a surrogate from the campaign to come on, and then we would ask them the question, hey, well, didn't Bill Clinton, when he was governor of Arkansas, approve this flag emblem that had a relationship to the Confederacy? So why were you asking that question via email instead of just doing it on your show?
Because I was trying to, first of all, I don't assume that everybody knows all the intricate details of legislation that Bill Clinton signed into law in the 80s. And I really actually wanted an answer. I mean, that it was less about putting anybody on the spot. I had mentioned it on TV after that, but it was more about, well, this is an issue and people are suggesting that Bill Clinton did this. What is the response? I mean, most of the questions I ask campaigns and candidates are in form like this, emails, trying to understand things
right
behind the scenes. There are, you know, the gotcha questions you can ask, but I legitimately wanted an answer. I mean, look, we can't pretend that the Confederacy does not get honored all over the place, especially as soon as you cross into Virginia and start driving south.
Oh, yeah.
So
oh, yeah.
I was interested in the facts of the hypocrisy, and then I don't think they ever got back to me.
Yeah, it didn't seem like it.
Let me ask you, though, about another email that has to do with CNN, and it has to do with Donna Brazile, who was a contributor over there, and I assume a paid contributor over at CNN. And and she sends an email to the campaign saying, sometimes I get an advanced look at the questions. And this all had to do with the town hall, and it now appears that the question was actually cut and paste from a, from an email that Roland Martin had sent around, who was one of the moderators of that very debate.
Raises a lot. I was the other moderator.
All right, so
it was a town hall, not a debate, but I mean, it's very, very troubling. Look, I have tremendous regard for Donna Brazile, and she's a good person and a nice person, and I like her a lot. But the action, whatever took place here, and I know that I had nothing to do with it, and I know that CNN, we were so closely guarding our documents that you couldn't even, they weren't ever emailed around. And this was a follow-up question that Roland Martin was going to ask, theoretically. CNN had found a freed prisoner, somebody who had been on death row, but because of the Innocence Project had been taken off death row. I believe his name is Ricky Jackson. If I'm getting that wrong, I apologize. And, you know, we wanted to put her in a tough situation. Here, you support the death penalty. Here's somebody who was almost killed because of the death penalty. What's your reaction to him? And we thought that that was great. And then to find out that somebody was unethically helping the Clinton campaign, tipping them off, is just very upsetting.
I have to follow up on that, and that is that somebody works, I would assume, for CNN. Is there any kind of investigation ongoing? How is it possible that could have happened?
You're saying that person was Donna Brazile.
But somehow Donna Brazile got a hold of the question.
How did she get it?
I believe that, I don't know for 100%. I know that I had nothing to do with it. My understanding is there has been that the email to Donna came from either Roland Martin or someone around Roland Martin, who is not with CNN. He's with a different channel. He's with TV1 or something like that we had partnered with for that town hall. Mm. And this was not one of CNN's questions. This was Roland Martin follow-up. So my understanding is that he or somebody on his team got that question to Donna Brazile.
Gotcha.
It was not part of the CNN list of questions.
I'm not trying to look.
It's horrifying.
Yeah.
Journalistically, it's horrifying. Absolutely. And I'm sure it will have an impact on partnering with this organization in the future. And I'm sure that it will have an effect on Donna Brazile is no longer with CNN because she's head of the DNC right now.
Right.
But I'm sure it will have some impact on Donna Brazile. And it's very, very upsetting because you go through a huge, and you could ask Q Hewitt about this, when we do these events, whether a debate or a town hall, we have a cone of silence.
Yeah.
Documents get shredded. We do not email them around. Believe me, it was really annoying. I was doing the town hall with Obama 2 weeks ago, and I was on the road for a lot of days before that, and they would not email me questions because of fears of hacking, because fears of leaking. People at CNN take it very, very seriously, and to have somebody who does not take it seriously to have us partner with that person, and then they do something completely unethical and share it with Donna Brazile, who then shares it with the Clinton campaign, it's horrifying and very, very upsetting.
Right.
And I mean, I can't condemn it any more than I condemn it in no uncertain terms. It's
all
awful.
Right. Yeah, we're going to have to leave it right there, Jake. But thank you so much for being willing to discuss these very delicate issues. We greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Jake.
Guys don't think I'm a Richard?
No, we don't.
Unlike that little weasel, John Podesta.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. Listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
I'm Brian Wilson alongside Larry O'Connor.
And what a special treat to have Brett Baer, anchor of Special Report, join us here at 7 a.m., 7:07 to be exact. Brett, good to have you, sir.
Good morning.
And I understand you are going to be anchoring O'Reilly tonight from the D.C. Bureau. We always like it when we get to wrestle the primetime 8 o'clock slot down here into Washington, D.C.
I am doing O'Reilly tonight, and then Fox News Sunday from Vegas on Sunday because Chris is getting ready for the big debate.
Wow, man.
That's right. And that's what I want to start with. I mean, God knows we have plenty to talk about in terms of what transpired this week in the presidential race. But I want to focus on this debate because I'm starting to hear rumblings, and I don't think that it's just mere speculation, that there are some serious voices advising Hillary Clinton that quite possibly she might not go forward with this debate. First of all, what does she have to gain by doing it? She only has something to lose. And secondly, they're floating this idea that, oh, it was so dirty and so disgraceful, and she's going to save the American people from another display. Do you think any of this is serious talk?
I mean, I think some of it may be serious talk as far as advisors giving her that advice. I think it would be probably bad advice. I mean, they did agree to three debates. They set it out that way from the beginning. The commission has always done it this way since 1976, and I think it might make her look like she's running from a confrontation with a guy that she believes that she can best, you know, on the debate stage.
I just wanted just a quick suggestion to the Trump campaign. If she were to do that, they should say, you know what, you're right, you're right, it's been ugly. Tell you what, let's have Pence and Kane debate again.
Yeah. No thanks, right?
Well, Chris Wallace is, you know, of course, the moderator of this, as you mentioned before, and I'm sure he's scrolled away up there in his office working on the topics. And we got to look at some of the things he's going to ask about, at least the general areas of exploration: fitness to be president, foreign hotspot, Supreme Court, economy, immigration, debt, and entitlements. But it's been made clear that it may not necessarily be in that order.
Oh, that's right, yeah. And this is part of the stipulation for moderators to put out these kind of broad topics. You saw with Lester Holt. And,
right.
And each moderator has put this out. But, you know, a lot of questions can fit into those buckets, if you will. And I think, you know, Chris has been working on it for quite some time. He's taken into account all that's already transpired. And obviously, every day, it's like drinking from a fire hose.
Yeah, it certainly is.
This presidential campaign. Yeah.
Can I just do a slight pivot here as we're talking about debates? Because we've had these WikiLeaks revelations this week. And one of them, I think, that won't go away is the connection between Donna Brazile at CNN advancing forward to the Clinton campaign a town hall debate. This cuts two ways. First of all, the insidious relationship between members of the mainstream media and one political organization or another, but also puts Donna Brazile, this is the angle that hasn't been discussed much, puts Donna Brazile in a pretty bad place. Her predecessor was drummed out of the DNC because emails revealed that Debbie Wasserman Schultz seemed to be tipping the scales on behalf of Hillary Clinton. How is she weathering this storm with the Bernie Sanders faction? Because it looks like she did the same thing.
Yeah, she denies it, and there is Politico, I think, got another email that was the verbatim, it looked like.
Yes, absolutely it was. Yeah.
And
by the way, we had Jake Tapper on yesterday, Brett, you might not have seen it, and he was a moderator at that town hall, and he, in no uncertain terms, said this is an outrage and embarrassing and journalistically horrible.
And it is. It is. It's not the way you do journalism. And it's, you know, I think it raises a lot of questions. And I think that a lot of these emails that we're seeing are pretty embarrassing as far as the interactions. But the substance of the emails, the real ones that raise a lot of red flags, are the ones tied to the server.
Yes.
And in the weeks before her server is scrubbed, with BleachBit, essentially taken down so you can never get emails out of it, there is a debate ongoing about what they're going to turn over, what they're not going to turn over, how they're going to talk about it. Meantime, just last night, Hillary Clinton put forward these answers to Judicial Watch, typed up answers, but they're under oath, in which she said she didn't know how the server was destroyed and, you know, had the process, or she didn't talk about it.
Wait, did she say she didn't know or she didn't recall? We got a lot of didn't recalls yesterday.
A lot of didn't recalls,
yeah.
That's right. She said she didn't know on that answer.
Yeah.
And, you know, meanwhile, her aides definitely know. And they are talking back and forth about what they're going to do.
Yeah, they're deeply involved in the nuts and bolts of that. You're right. The evidence is there. You know, it was about this. I don't recall. I mean, out of out of 25 questions, on 21 occasions, she said she did not recall. And by the way, she refused to answer two of the questions completely because she said the question was too broad. That was a lawyer determination. I mean, that is, seems to be her go-to strategy when she's pinned against the wall, is that she doesn't recall.
Yeah, and it's semantics and it's legalese. And, you know, if people were fired up about this and there wasn't other things in this election that are drawing a lot of attention, I think that this would be a major problem for her. But because, you know, we're looking at a lot of shiny things in this election.
Yeah, we sure are. Yeah.
I think that it doesn't get covered as much.
It kind of makes you miss those charming answers to questions like, dude, that was 4 years ago. Brett, we've only got a minute left, but let's talk about those shiny things. A slew of Trump accusers coming out this week. A lot of them, I mean, they're telling stories that couldn't possibly be verified, things that happened on an airplane 35 years ago, things like that. And then you see the polls. I'm hearing pundits in this town predicting that it's over, which is shocking. Why would anyone predict anything in this election, given what we've learned in the last year and a half? But what's your take on it?
Yeah, I mean, clearly, this is a major blow, and it comes at a horrific time. If you listen to these accounts, they are horrific, if true, and obviously you have to take them for what they are. And those women, you know, said that they are coming forward after that debate, but it was all together, and it was a blast of all these allegations all at once. I do think that if he were to survive this, it would be the biggest turnaround in modern politics you've ever seen. Mm. So the people who say that this is over, his path to 270 is pretty narrow.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to have to leave it right there. Brett Baer, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck on the O'Reilly tonight and all of this extra stuff you're taking on.
All right. We'll see you.
Exactly. Brett Baer, tonight on O'Reilly, and then this Sunday, Fox News Sunday, because Chris Wallace, he is busy preparing for that Wednesday debate. By the way, that Wednesday debate, of course, you'll be able to hear right here on WMAO.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall, 5 to 9, Monday through Friday, only on 105.9 FM, WMAL. The best of Mornings on the Mall.
Joining us on the line right now is Joe Concha, who's the Hills media reporter, a good friend of this program. Good morning to you, Joe.
We're good friends now. Wow. I didn't know we elevated our relationship.
Yeah,
I feel the same way.
I feel a connection.
Now, look out. Brian's going to expect something at Christmas time.
Oh, well.
No, a nice card is all I need. All right, listen, Joe, here's the thing. We wanted to have you on because there seems to be, with all of these WikiLeaks revelations, thousands and thousands of emails are out there. And as we start to call through them and look, we're finding some real evidence of a very, very cozy relationship between the Clinton campaign and certain members of the media. Let me start off, because there's so many places to start here, but let me start off with John Harwood of the New York Times. This was a guy who was a debate moderator in one of the Republican debates, and we now find out he had a very, very a cozy relationship with the Clinton people.
Yeah, well, he also was, as you said, a moderator for CNBC. Mm-hmm. Okay, so here's what I want to say to Dean Baquet, who is the New York Times executive editor, and to Mark Hoffman, who runs CNBC. When are you going to suspend or fire John Harwood?
Yeah.
Why isn't anybody asking that question? In other words, I do this all the time. There's bias in the media. There's collusion in the media. And then people like me talk to people like you. We complain about it, and it only gets worse. Mm-hmm. Why? Because there's no accountability. Zero. So I want to know when John Harwood is going to be given his walking papers. Because this is clearly journalism. It's a breach that we've never seen before, and we saw several examples of it yesterday. I want to know why he still has a job.
That's a great
point. I want to know why other media members are not asking why he still has a job.
Yeah, that's a very good question. I mean, just so people know what he did, apparently he wrote an email, and well, it's not apparently, it's right there, you can read it, where he actually goes on to advise the campaign as to how they should conduct their business.
That's not a journalism. If you're a journalist, for the New York Times, by the way, it's not like he's a blogger. Okay, that's not your job. And CNBC, he was made a debate moderator. He called Donald Trump's campaign a cartoon at the time, and then bragged to his friends that he took on Trump.
Yeah,
how does he still have a job in this business? He shouldn't.
Well,
so why am I the only person asking this question?
Well, we asked the question ourselves this morning, and sadly, Joe Concha, I sort of answered my own question, and that is, I think it's because the media is the story here. Because who's going to call for CNBC to fire John Harwood? The New York Times, because they've got one of their star reporters implicated in this. Is CNN going to call for him to be stepped down? Well, no, because their own contributor, Donna Brazile, is also tagged in this. ABC News? Well, no, because George Stephanopoulos also shows up in this. Politico? I can keep going. How many news organizations in this town covering the Clinton campaign have been exposed in these WikiLeaks emails, Joe?
I could answer, not the Hill.
Yeah, well, and that's why you're calling on them. There you go.
Exactly, but...
Go ahead.
Can we talk about Donna Brazile?
Yeah, let's talk
Please
about
do,
that.
Yes.
That's pretty egregious.
Okay, so she's a CNN employee at the time. She's a political analyst. She sends an email to the Clinton campaign communications director, Jennifer Palmieri, with a subject header. Forget the text of it. From time to time, I get questions in advance for town halls. And sure enough, a question that she passes along the next night is used during a CNN town hall that they did with TV1 and Roland Martin. And if she's saying time to time, this didn't just happen once. This obviously happened several times. How you define time to time? Periodically? That's plural. All right, so I want to know why CNN has yet to say, you know what, you're not welcome back in the network when you're no longer DNC chairwoman. You're fired. And I want to know why CNN isn't doing an internal investigation as to how questions are getting to Donna Brazile, who had nothing to do with the CNN town hall, and then she's passing it along to the Clinton Foundation. When I ask CNN, you conduct an internal investigation, I get no response. They have their media reporter investigating instead, which I'm sure he will do a fine job doing.
Yeah, well,
so what are we talking about here? She should be fired, and there should be an internal investigation, period, and it ain't happening.
Yeah, it is frustrating. It is. I mean, then she's asked about it, and she goes out and makes a statement. I never passed on it. Well, I mean, the header in the email is, from time to time, I get an advanced look at the questions.
Yeah.
That was the stated purpose of the email.
Oh. Right, and she deflects and goes on to blame Russia for the rest of her statement, which has nothing to do with the fact that however this got out, you own that. That is your email. What happened yesterday is just so horrible. I mean, it just on so many levels, all the examples that you gave. And as you said, since everybody's basically implicated except for the Hill, then who's going to call out for actual accountability? Because if there's no accountability, it's only going to get worse, guys.
Right. There's nobody watching the watchers. And Joe, sadly, I think it continues. You know, I said we started this morning with our show prep, and I did a quick Google News search on WikiLeaks. And all of the headlines that I'm seeing right now are not about what we learned yesterday in WikiLeaks and all of these news organizations who were in cahoots with the Clinton campaign. Instead, all the headlines relate to this statement made yesterday by John Podesta, the man who was participating in all of these emails. Listen.
I think it's a reasonable assumption or at least a reasonable conclusion, that Mr. Stone had advance warning in the Trump campaign, had advance warning about what Assange was going to do.
Now, he's talking about Roger Stone, who used to work for the Trump campaign and still has a close relationship with them, claiming that it's a reasonable assumption or conclusion, as he corrected himself, that Roger Stone and the Trump campaign had advance notice of this and in some way was in cahoots with WikiLeaks and the Russian government, who they are blaming for this. So today's coverage of the WikiLeaks, Joe Concha, explain how this is the narrative, that it's all about linking Donald Trump and the Russians and implicating them with the hack.
It's the D word, guys.
The D word?
Right? Hey, don't worry about what you read in those emails. Let's talk about John Podesta's speculation.
Yeah.
Is somehow orchestrating all of this.
Your phone's breaking up a bit, but I mean, is the media taking that ball and running with it because they're so easily led by the nose by John Podesta, or is it because they prefer that narrative to the one that shows that they're working with the campaign?
Because they squirm otherwise, right?
Oh, it's intentional ignorance, right? It's just a matter of there's a better word for intentional ignorance, but willful ignorance. Thank you. That's the problem here, right? They're purposely ignoring the story because they're trying to deflect away from their own imperfections. So probably the people that are reporting on this are going to be found in one way or another if they already haven't to be in cahoots with the Clinton campaign. But yeah, John Podesta, he's the victim. We should all feel
well,
sorry.
Well, and that's the thing I wanted to ask you about. I mean, that's pretty rich, isn't it? I mean, here the Clinton campaign people and the people at the State Department and the entire Obama administration has dragged its feet collectively every step of the way. They fought it tooth and tongue. We're not going to release these documents until a judge forces us to do it. We would probably have a lot of this stuff in the public domain if it had not been for the attempt to delete a bunch of emails and to not give out the emails that were there. And then they complain when they land up in another place. You know, if you're not going to follow the strictures of the law and provide these documents, I don't think you get to whine when they end up in the public domain another way.
I must have missed the part where how did the Access Hollywood tape end up in the hands of the Washington Post? No one seems to be complaining about that. They concentrated rightly on the tape and what was said. So you can't have it both ways.
See, this is why you're one of our good friends, Joe.
That's
Concha,
right.
Media reporter at The Hill.
We're not great friends.
Thank you, Joe. We greatly appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Give me your address so I can send you that 50 cent card.
You got it.
That's right.
Lose my number. Let the record reflect, as Joe Concha repeated multiple times, The Hill was not implicated in these.
Not at all.
Not yet.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. Now, more of the best of Mornings on the Mall.
I'm Brian Wilson alongside Larry O'Connor.
There was a hearing in Richmond, Virginia yesterday where Delegate Tim Hugo, chairman of the House Republican Caucus, said that the person in charge of the election process in the Commonwealth of Virginia should be fired. Said Edgardo Cortez is his name. He's the head of the Virginia Department of Elections, the commissioner there. He said that he needs to be replaced by Governor Terry Cullough quickly with competent and nonpartisan leadership. Quoting Hugo, he said, "I think the root of the problem is integrity. We're having this hearing basically because of you," he said to Mr. Cortez. All of this, and by the way, he didn't take kindly to that. He said, "To call into question my personal integrity is beyond the pale." Whenever somebody says beyond the pale, you know that they're really getting worked up about it. This all as reported by the Daily Press down there in Richmond. What's going on here are several questions about the voting process in the Commonwealth of Virginia. We've been bringing a lot of this to your attention here on WMAL. Recent report that shows hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of people who are non-citizens who are registered to vote, who have voted. There's also questions about the Veris voter registration system. This is the system that they use to process all of the registrations, and there are a lot of registrations happening in the Commonwealth of Virginia this year, especially all of those felons who are now able to vote. So this is starting to reach ahead, and the Republicans are not laying down in Richmond, and they're saying that something needs to happen, especially having to do with the citizen check. Quoting again from the Daily Press, a number of Republicans expressed concern that there's no citizen check for voter registration. Voters affirm their citizenship, and lying about it is a felony, but of course there's no database of citizens to check the voter registrations against it. So,
well, of course there's not.
So
because they don't really want to check them.
So let's just get you ask any Democrat about this and say, well, shouldn't there be a citizen check when people register to vote? And their answer will be, well, they swear an affidavit when they sign their voter registration card under penalty of a felony that they are a U.S. citizen. And then, of course, the follow-up question is, okay, well, how do you enforce that?
Right.
And there is no answer. At no point in the voting process in the United States of America, at the registration process or at the actual ballot box, is the citizenship of a voter ever determined.
It's a violation of the law, and yet there's no way to investigate those who have violated the law.
Nope.
No way at all. Well, what good is it to be a violation of the law if you can never actually enforce the law?
And given this year's election cycle and the topics at hand that voters are passionate about, do you think maybe, just maybe, people who are here in this country who are not citizens might just try to risk it, might just try to register
and
vote?
Excuse me. They're here illegally, so they've already shown that they don't have any respect for the law.
Yeah.
Because if they respected the law, they wouldn't be here illegally. So if you've already violated the law by entering this country illegally, what problem do you have if you then go out and vote illegally?
I'm in this country and I'm thinking, let me get this straight. You're not enforcing your borders.
Right.
You're not sending people back to their country if you even discover they're here illegally and they've broken the immigration laws. You're letting them work here, even though that's against the law. What tells me you're going to do anything to enforce the voting laws?
Yeah, that's right. There are no consequences for the things I've done illegally thus far. So why would there be a consequence for this?
Now, this could make a difference in many of the states where voting is looking to be kind of tight, and the polls are showing things to be tight in some of the important states. But apparently, based on the latest round of polls, that's not the case on the Commonwealth of Virginia. And there have been a couple of moves here by the Trump campaign that call into question whether they are in it for the long haul in the Old Dominion. Now, you'll remember just a couple of days ago, we had Corey Stewart, who had been running the Trump campaign in Virginia, on. He had been fired because he was protesting in front of the RNC. Here's what Corey Stewart said. Tuesday, I believe, when we had him on.
They were going to move the money into the states where there was significant down-ticket races. Why? Because the Republican establishment is undermining the Trump campaign. They frankly don't want him to win. That is the truth. They've made that fairly clear.
And he was talking specifically about the RNC moving money out of the state. Well, yesterday we reported to you that there was an early morning story out of NBC News and corroborated by ABC News that said that there was a Wednesday conference call in the evening of the Trump campaign, and they said that they were, in fact, going to refocus their efforts out of Virginia and onto a four-state strategy that includes Florida, Ohio, North Carolina, and Pennsylvania.
Well,
later in the day, the Trump campaign denied that and said, now we're just moving some staff around.
Yeah, I think the first report is probably true. I mean, when you look at the numbers in Virginia, it would appear that that might be a good strategy.
Well, you're not the only one that thinks that. Yesterday on the Drive at 5, I had Kyle Condick. He's the managing editor of Sabato's Crystal Ball. They cover politics all over the place, of course, but they're located in Virginia, so they have an affinity to the Old Dominion. Here's what he said.
It's probably been a mistake for the Trump-Pence ticket to focus so much on Virginia, because it's really looked like the whole election that the state would probably perform better for Clinton than whatever her national percentage is. Basically, the state just demographically is not that good for Trump, and that was obvious way back in the primary. Trump did win the state, but really didn't perform all that well. And I think if John Kasich hadn't been on the ballot, Marco Rubio probably would have won the state.
Now, setting aside the question of the presidential race in Virginia, which, you know, believe the polls or don't believe the polls.
Right.
Let's see. It depends. Let's just watch what the Trump campaign does. Trump not being here campaigning, Pence not being here campaigning, if that occurs, how does that affect the down-ticket races?
It seems to me that what I'm detecting in this election cycle is that people are separating those two. That they're separating the presidential race from the congressional races in a significant way. And it may not have all that much impact.
Well, one race locally that is looking very tight is that of Republican incumbent Barbara Comstock out in Fairfax and Loudoun counties, where her district stretches. And again, Kyle Condick commented on that race.
Certainly, Barbara Comstock's race in Virginia 10 is a top-tier race. That's a district that Mitt Romney very narrowly won in 2012. I expect Clinton to win that district and not just by a few points. And so that's something that Dick Comstock's just going to have to deal with in terms of, you know, getting crossover votes to win that district. And, you know, Comstock is a very well-funded candidate and a hardworking candidate.
Well, that's for sure true. You cannot go anywhere without seeing the ads.
Yeah, there's race. I mean, they're like everywhere. And here's the other thing about that is that a lot of Democrats who are going to vote for Hillary are not enthusiastic about her, and they want to put a balance and a check and balance on them. So they're going to split their ticket, many of them are, and vote for Republicans on the congressional level.
I also wonder, one quick other point. You mentioned, you're right, they're not enthusiastic about voting for her. And I wonder if in a state like Virginia or in some of these other states where we're getting this narrative now that, oh, it's over, Trump's not even going to campaign there, I wonder if they just won't turn out.
Yeah.
And I wonder how that will affect the down-ticket races, or for that matter, potentially could affect the presidential race.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall, 5 to 9, Monday through Friday, only on 105.9 FM, WMAL. You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
Are you ready for a miracle?
Ready as I can be.
Are you ready for a miracle?
I don't know what to make of this story, but I can just tell you this. If the Scottsdale Scorpions, the minor league affiliate to the New York Mets, didn't know exactly what they were getting when they signed Tim Tebow, well, they got their full-on dose of Tebow mania yesterday. This story was first reported via Twitter by a woman named Kari Van Horn. Here's what she tweeted with a picture of the event. Here's, are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Tebow signing autographs. Fan has what looks like a seizure. Not moving. Tebow puts hand on him and says a prayer. Man breathes. Wow. Has Tim Tebow just been used as an instrument of the Lord to revive a man from a near-death experience?
Well, I believe in the power of prayer.
I don't. I, of course I do. And I believe in miracles. I'm asking the question.
I don't know.
Well.
But I mean, I think it was a compassionate thing to do.
Video, of course. Video of the incident has been circulated, and many other reports have come in. The Associated Press describes it a little differently, and I think is probably closer to the truth. If I may quote the AP, Daniel Kelly, a Tebow fan from nearby Casa Grande, said he met the ill spectator earlier in the game. Kelly was getting a baseball autographed by Tebow when the seizure began. Quote, he was just shaking violently. We're like, get a paramedic, get a paramedic. Kelly said he and his wife Samantha began to pray. Kelly then looked up to see that Tebow was also praying while placing a hand on the fan's leg. Hmm. Tebow stayed with the fan for 15 to 20 minutes until paramedics took him from the stadium.
Hmm.
He was having a seizure. And obviously when something like that happens to somebody, it scares people. People start praying. Tebow is a believing Christian. He began praying as well and then just stayed with
Well,
him.
I do believe.
I don't think that he actually revived
no,
the man.
No, I don't think so either. But I do believe in the power of prayer, and I think it was a compassionate thing to do. It's just too bad he never didn't lay hands on his football career and revive that as well.
Speaking of that, also in the game, he crashed into the left field wall chasing down a fly ball, and it looked pretty violent. He was asked afterwards, are you okay? And he said, yeah, I've been hit harder than that.
You've been listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. Listen Monday through Friday, 5 to 9 a.m. to hear the show live on 105.9 FM, WMAL.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shaped the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.